Hello and welcome to Africa, Stories in the 55. I'm Laura Angela Bagnetto. This week we have two writers on the program to talk about their work. Up first is Henrietta Rose Innes, a writer from Cape Town in South Africa. Her book, The Green Lion, has won acclaim back home and was just released in French. Henrietta was in our studios and spoke about what her novel is all about.
Green Lion is a book set in Cape Town, which is my hometown in South Africa. And it's a slightly alternative, slightly futuristic Cape Town where environmental destruction has advanced a little bit more than it has at present, but just a little bit. And in response, the government has decided to close off and fence off the whole of Table Mountain, which, as you may know, is the iconic mountain in the center of the city. And they've turned it into a kind of private game reserve where they are preserving indigenous species. The other aspect that is different to the real Cape Town is that in this world, there's a zoo on the slopes of the mountain where, again, the government is trying to breed back into existence a very rare, almost completely extinct lion species called the black-maned lion, which historically in the real world was a kind of lion that used to roam the slopes of the mountain and was shot to extinction in the 19th century. But in the world of the book, they're trying to recreate this species. And my protagonist, Kwan, is given a job as a zookeeper in this establishment where he becomes quite obsessed with the lioness in his care.
Your book is called The Green Lion, and it's an interesting motif because actually it refers to more than one lion. There's actually many lions in this novel, historically and in present day in your book. What was your attraction? Because you can really feel it in the book.
I'm glad you say that because that's one of the things I actually wanted to create, is a sense of multiple images of wild animals throughout the book. There are all sorts of artificial lions, images of lions, pictures of lions, myths of lions. And part of what I wanted to explore was this idea that as we humans lose and destroy the real creatures around us, we become more and more obsessed and fascinated with the images, the artificial images of those creatures. So that's one thing that I did actually want to come through quite strongly in the book. I also have a personal interest in this particular kind of lion. Personal and quite sentimental, really, is when I was a little girl, my mother used to be the artist at the South African Natural History Museum in Cape Town, and I used to go along with her. So she used to paint the backdrops to a lot of the dioramas in that museum. And one thing I was fascinated by, even as a tiny girl, was that there was a single black and white photograph of a black-maned lion, not a real live animal, but a taxidermied version. There are none left, no specimens at all left in South Africa. There are only a handful of specimens, skeletons, stuffed animals in a few international natural history museums around the world. That's the only version we've got left in South Africa, is this faded black and white old Victorian photograph. But I was fascinated by it. And one of the most satisfying moments in the research for this book was that I tracked down that very taxidermied specimen, which is stuck in the vaults, hidden away in storage at the London Natural History Museum. And I obtained special permission to go down there and search all their stuffed animals until I found my lion, who was the original inspiration for this book.
Oh, that's fabulous.
It's a wonderful place, that storage room. Not many people are allowed in, but it's a complete treasure trove of hundreds, maybe thousands of specimens that they don't have on display at the London Natural History Museum. Amazing place.
Could you read an excerpt of your
Absolutely. Book? Absolutely. So this is very early on in the book. Con has just got his job at the zoo and has just had his first glancing encounter with the lion, which has affected him very deeply. And he's come back to his girlfriend's house where he's staying. Alone in the bed that night, he dreamt he was a lion and that he was wrestling with another lion, a sister lion, brother lion. It breathed, it rumbled, it pressed its meaty weight into his face. He was trying to open his jaws wide enough to clamp them on a neck, to snap a long bone or pierce a belly, to feel the hot insides. It wasn't a new dream. He had dreamt it often, all his life. But this time it was extremely clear and detailed. Each hair was crisp, each claw thrust ecstatic. The weight of the body on top of him was crushing. But as he pressed back, he felt the furred skin dissolve into something smooth and gasping, and suddenly Elise was there with her late night breath and the coolness of the outside air on her skin. She was saying confusingly, "Con, it's me. It's just a dream." Soothing, but at the same time pulling away from him with alarm, and from this he knew he'd frightened her, had shouted out or even struck at her. Ashamed, he didn't open his eyes. He pressed his face into the pillow and pretended to sleep, until in fact he did. In the morning, he could still feel the heat of the fur and the weight of his claws, the taste of his own breath in his mouth, thick and sweetish like a dog's. And other things, too, forgotten dreams within the dream. Running, seeking. He wiped a trace of saliva off his chin. The dream disgusted him, the sensation of blood at the back of his throat.
What else are you working on right now? What do you have anything that you...
Sure. Well, I'm always working on something. Yeah, it's very exciting. It has been out in South Africa for a year now, but now it's expanding into the world. So it'll be in the States as well as the UK in November, I'm very happy to say. And I'm currently actually enrolled in a PhD program at the University of East Anglia in the UK. I've been there for a couple of years. And hopefully what will come out of that is a new novel sometime next year, which is going to be also set in South Africa and will be dealing with the idea of urban wilderness within the city again. It seems to be my constant theme, and how landscapes within the city preserve the memory of a place.
Up next, we thought we'd return to Abdul Adan, a Somali-Kenyan writer on the Kane Prize shortlist for his short story, The Life Bloom Gift. He spoke to Stories in the 55 about why he used a scientific report to explain the cultural divide surrounding love and physical touch.
The article is the narrator's way of telling us more about Ted Life Bloom. And the narrator, of course, shares in Ted's delusions or whatever. And in a scientific article, one allows himself the distance, the detachment, to report on another. It was the easiest way for me to let the reader know who Ted Life Bloom really is. Otherwise, it would be extremely ridiculous to attempt it any other way. So it was more of a creative choice.
You live in the United States. Your descriptions of fleshy Americans are truly interesting, especially in the way that you talk about the sense of touch. Do you think that your background has enabled you to see this in a different light because of your experiences?
Overweight people are not so many among Somalis. But it's also not really frowned upon, or a fat person is not necessarily less attractive than a skinny person in Somali culture. He's just well-fed, you know. So I was coming from that place, because in my story, the narrator likes fat people. So the fatter the person, the better. And he criticizes an article he reads about animal love, because he imagines the writer is blonde and flat-chested. So he imagines her not to have a lot of flesh on her, pretty much. My background, obviously, has a lot to do with that, but also with the idea that love and physical touch, as it has to do with love, is not necessarily something we can sexualize. And that love and touch, all that, is actually above sexuality. Where I grew up, on the Kenyan-Somali border, two men holding hands and walking around together, it's not necessarily something people would call gay, whereby in America I was used to seeing young men who pretty much do not want to touch each other, young men who like each other, who are good friends, but they can say you can't hold your friend on the shoulder, you can't hold hands and walk because someone will call you gay and you're afraid of being called gay and you're not gay. So there's a certain liberating feeling in the idea that touch has nothing to do with sex necessarily, regardless of who is touching who.
That's all the time we have today. Thanks for listening to Africa, Stories in the 55. I'm Laura Angela Bagnetto. Until next time.